The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Coming to you cordless, sports fans. I'm looking into the camera. That's what I'm doing. Hi. Hello. It's 11:02 p.m. on the West Coast. No, it's a shit. I can't do it right ever. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 minutes after 2 p.m. in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and 10:02 p.m. right here in Ilhan Omar's district here in northeast Minneapolis, and I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night. This is episode number 49. I'm just going to tell you right now, we have our 50th show tomorrow, and we have a very special guest. I wasn't able to announce this or post it till yesterday. Michael Harrison, the founder and publisher of Talkers Magazine, is going to be on our show. He's going to be our exclusive guest. Talkers Magazine is the Bible of talk media, the industry trade publication for talk media, both television and radio in the United States. He's a very knowledgeable guy. He's a very good interviewer. I've interviewed him before. He's kind of sort of become a friend of mine, if I can say that, and I'm happy to have him on. It's going to be just a thrill. Our 50th show. 51, Wednesday, Jeff Meyer from Calling News. He's going to be here. He comes in about a couple of times a month. Yeah, when we shake him down for the news, he gives us the thing as only he can do it. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you you're going to agree with everything he says, but he'll always make you think. He has a unique take on everything, and that's the reason we have him on. That's the reason. Thursday, don't have a guest yet. Now, next Wednesday, the 22nd, the day before Thanksgiving, we're taking Thanksgiving off. But the day before, on Wednesday, is the 60th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy in Dealey Plaza in Dallas. And I'm trying to put together, I've been actually working on this for weeks, a big show, but people keep bugging in and out. So I don't exactly know what the guest is. I want to have a panel discussion, but right now I don't know if that's going to happen. But we should have somebody on here some way, somehow, for that. And if worse comes to worse, I have a very detailed theory on what happened there in Dealey Plaza, and it's not involving Lee Harvey Oswald picking up a rifle and shooting somebody. It doesn't. So if nothing else, I'll tell my story, because it takes a while. I was kind of hoping to do that anyway, but I don't know if I want to bore the panel, but at any rate, that's what we got going on here. So anyway, I'll tell you, first of all, no guest tonight. So please, you see the number, it's not even a number, I'm sorry, it's a URL at the bottom of the screen, jimandnight.com/call. You want to be on the show? You go to that webpage, click the big blue button at the top of the screen, adjust your camera and mic, get the crap out of your teeth, comb your hair, your little preview screen there, push the join button and you're in the queue. It's really simple. It's way simpler than even a Zoom call. And I put this up here, I want to show you guys this. This QR code right here, that would be on the right side of your screen. If you aim your cell phone at that, it will take you to that webpage so you can push that button. Now, we have people calling in here all the time off their cell phones, and it pretty much works like a FaceTime call. It does. So it's like you can do it. It even works on Android. You know, just take a shot of that QR code, and you're good to go, and you're there. That's the reason that's there. I've been taking the QR code off the screen a lot because I don't know if you can tell here, but when we have guests on, it kind of covers up part of their video, and I don't want to screw them. And also, I don't know how useful that is, really. I'm actually thinking about changing the URL so it goes directly to the, so that that QR code goes directly to the preview page and rather than the page on our website with a big blue button. Yeah, I'm sure you wanted to hear all that. So we had a very interesting weekend, not just in the news, but me personally. This is true. I advertised. We did not do a show on Thursday because I went to a funeral. I did go to a funeral. I have some thoughts about that. So I went to a funeral. One of the guys I grew up with in my small town in Minnesota passed away. He was an interesting man. I'm obviously not going to name his name here, even though he was a small time publisher of political journalism, and he had a very interesting life. He was basically what you would call him. He was 10 years older than me, which means, he was basically graduated from high school around 64, something like that, roughly, early mid-60s. And he basically got going on to become what you would call, at that time, a political activist. And he blew his hand off preparing a bomb to blow something up. So that happened around 71 or 72, I think. Whatever. So I'm at this funeral. There aren't a lot of people there. It's a memorial service, and there aren't a lot of people there. Maybe about 40 people, maybe 50. But most of the people were his age, and of course he was in his late 70s. So all his basically those old cohorts was there, and I'll just be perfectly blunt. If I'm going to use the stereotype, there were a bunch of old hippies. That's what they were, and. But I found what I found interesting looking at all these people. I realized, now I didn't know everybody there. I knew a lot of the people. I knew a few of them actually, like personally, like, I knew them and by name and I talked to them. There's a whole bunch of people I kind of knew peripherally. I knew who they were. That's a better way to put it. As far as I could tell, everybody at this memorial service, at least everybody that was his age, was actually, they all came from affluent families, if not wealthy families. And this occurred to me. His best friend inherited millions of dollars from a very famous scientist. His father was a very famous scientist. And so he did. Then I started to realize after thinking about that, all of these people came from money. I was thinking, And then I started to think about what's going on in colleges right now. All those protests, especially these pro-Hamas hope protests, which I find this just ludicrous. Here's the deal: you haven't been following the news or history, and that is, they free Palestine. Well, Palestine's been free if you're talking about the Gaza Strip for about 15, 17 years. The Israelis have not. Encroached on that. Matter of fact, if anything, the Israelis have helped them out with infrastructure, electricity, water, that sort of thing. They've had their own, they've been self-governing for 15 years. And you'll notice, if I can put this kindly, nothing happened in the terms that the Hamas government was elected by the Palestinians in 2006, I think it was. They haven't had a free election since. And it's plainly obvious. I mean, they've made no attempt to take care of their people. It's squalor, essentially. And the Hamas has not created any infrastructure at all. And the little they've had, they've actually dismantled for the war effort, which has been planning for years. And it's obvious now. I mean, Hamas has been very, very plain about this. Their goal is to wipe not just Israel, but all Jews off the map. This entire little country, if you want to call it that, I mean, they aren't officially recognized, but they are essentially, this entire tiny little country exists to kill Jewish people. That's their goal. They don't really care about having any sort of life outside of that. The majority, it appears the majority of the Palestinians are with them on this, not all of them. Yeah, and you're never going to find that many people that crazy, but that. And so I'm looking at the stuff going on in college campuses, and I'm thinking the same thing. Oh my God, all of these kids and their kids who are doing all this protesting are basically come from affluent families. They don't know better. Now I saw something on I think it was Fox News or something. Where they sent, and I don't know, and I hate to say it, I think it was probably Jesse Waters' show where he sent his Man on the Street Johnny out to the protests, and Johnny interviewed some of these kids, and it was honest, astonishing how little they knew even about the basic facts of what was going on there. Basically, as far as they could tell, these kids were protesting because people on TikTok told them to. Now, I've gone on about my feelings on TikTok. I mean, I think it should be eradicated from the face of the earth. Of course, I think that about Twitter, too. But the thing is, TikTok, the difference with TikTok is owned by a subsidiary of the Chinese Communist Party for all practical purposes. It's a standalone company, but all Chinese companies do have to bow down and kneel to the Chinese Communist Party. That's the only way you can do business over there. So basically, the party either directly or indirectly controls what people see on TikTok and what the data that TikTok takes in. And it's amazing how many of these kids, for lack of a better term, get their information solely from that and nothing else. So they're out protesting. They want to see, you know, Palestine free from the river to the sea, blah, 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 you know. And they don't seem to really grasp anything about what's going on. And it's becoming increasingly obvious that Hamas calculated this into the war. They knew they could manipulate Western opinion because of the stupid liberals, especially the stupid college kids, apparently. They knew this. And so it was actually preordained calculation. Just like, you know, okay, so I got to show you something here. I'm watching CBS News tonight. I got to find this because I want to read it to you. Okay. CBS News, Nora O'Donnell, they ran a chyron on the bottom of the screen. This was the story about this story, and the chyron said, Gaza's largest hospital caught in crossfire. Now, it's been brought up that the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, has finally uncovered the secret hideaway headquarters of Hamas underneath Gaza's largest hospital. So now, there's, you know, they do this on purpose too, because there's only two, first of all, they don't care about their people, because there's only two ways to look at this. Either you're going to bomb the hospital and kill a bunch of civilians, and then Hamas points and says, oh my God, look at all the civilians they killed. Never mind all the 1,300 people they brutally, brutally tortured and murdered on October 7th through 11th. Never mind that. And if Israel does not bomb the hospital, well then Hamas lives with impunity to plan another day, in which, like I said, they've already declared, this is not my words, theirs, that their goal is to kill every Jewish person on the planet. So what do you do? They're running this. This is a calculated campaign they're running to make certain that the Jewish people, and especially the Jewish military, look as bad as possible. That's what's going on there. Now, you may disagree with me on that, you know, polite people here can disagree on what exactly this war is about, but that doesn't change the fact that, like I said, the vast majority of the college kids who are protesting this, basically, well, you know, the question is, and I put this in the description for tonight's show, and that is, can you say unemployment? You know, almost all these kids, they're basically unemployed. I don't even think they go to class, let alone have a job. You know, their job has become protesting, and they protest everywhere. And the colleges put up with this. They're not learning anything. So there's a double whammy here. Again, once again, it's a double whammy. There's a two-edged sword here. On the one hand, they don't know enough to know what to protest intelligently. They don't. And secondly, they're not getting an education on top of that. So, like, what do you, you know, I mean, this does not look good for the country, folks. Do I have to say this? Do I have to bring this up? God, I don't know. So, meanwhile, what else happened this weekend? And that is, David Axelrod in particular, and a bunch of Democrats in general, are basically urging Biden to get out of the presidential race. Now, this is really interesting, because it's plainly obvious now that the Democratic machine wants him out, and they've started the machinations to do that. the really interesting thing is, and I don't necessarily trust this because they've not only have this happened to every president, but it happened to Trump in particular, and a lot of it turned out not to be true. And so because of that, I don't want to assume this is true of Biden too, but it's been reported that privately to his staff, Joe Biden called David Axelrod a prick this weekend for talking about this stuff. But somebody on their side has to do it. I mean, his re-election chances are looking more dismal every day. And I've talked about the cheating before. I'm what you call an election denier. I do think they cheated the 2020 election. Well, we know they cheated, like, quote unquote, legally, which I use the term rigged to differentiate that. For example, about the fact with the changing the election laws, ostensibly because of COVID, in at least a dozen instances, probably about 17, it went against the state constitutions where they changed them. So, I mean, you have a bunch of election results that were basically invalid, but no one bothered to point that out or take them to court or whatever. But I've also pointed out the fact, too, here that there's good evidence that the Republicans cheated in 2004. I mean, this has been going on regularly, and it's pretty much accepted by historians now that the Democrats, or actually not the Democrats, specifically Joseph Kennedy, John F. Kennedy's father, cheated the 1960 election to get him elected president, which is still to this day one of the closest elections in American history. And I ran into something here today, preparing for the show. I ran into a video that I bookmarked quite a while ago. Well, the video is from January of this year. And I'm going to play it because it has to, I was talking about, okay, so how did Joseph Kennedy specifically do that in 1960? He paid off the people in Cook County. Cook County is Chicago. That one county, and their election was so close that one county flipped Illinois, and flipping Illinois flipped the entire Electoral College for Kennedy. So this is how close elections can be stolen. One single county made the difference in the entire election results. It made the difference between Nixon becoming president and John F. Kennedy becoming president. Of course, ostensibly, John F. Kennedy won. But, like I said, I mean, this is pretty much an accepted fact now. I don't know I'm not an historian, so I haven't gone through this at all, but supposedly, it's generally agreed from historians that this happened. And it's also a good example about the fact, and I've talked about this many times before, it would be hard to cheat a federal presidential election if it isn't close. But if it's close, oh yeah, you could do it. Yeah, no problem, actually, And so that's what happened in 2020. The election was quite close, actually, But talking about Nixon, on the other hand, won in 1968, and in 1972, he blew, oh God, was it Eugene McCarthy? Yeah, I think it was, out of the water. It was the most lopsided election in American history. And this is pretty amazing, considering the fact he lost the closest election in American history, and ostensibly by cheating, and supposedly he knew that they cheated that election. And he did nothing. And a lot of people have said, a lot of historians said that it was his finest moment because there had been no way to put that back, the genie back in the box if he decided to contest it. And this is another thing I talked about too. Trump can go on and on about being cheated in 2020. Basically, unless you can't, the election's first week in November, if by the first of the year, by the first week of January, if you can't prove or definitively show that it was, that the election was quote unquote stolen, you're screwed. Your time's up. You can go on until you're blue in the face. There's no mechanism either in the Constitution or even laid out by Congress to contest the presidential election. There's no mechanism to do it. So it gets anytime this happens, like even in 2000, it gets tossed to the Supreme Court. And some people called, even their members of the court, supposedly said that the ruling they made for the 2000 election, Gore versus Bush, Bush Jr., was one of the worst rulings that ever made in there, ever. Because here's the deal. They don't want to make it. You know, they're forced to do it. Somebody has to decide. So, and they're the, you know, the judicial arbiters in the United States in our political system. So it gets thrown to them. They don't want to decide. You know, what are they? Are they election officials? No. You know, they don't want to do it. And I don't blame them. They don't have any horse in that fight. They don't give a crap. And what are they supposed to do? Start counting votes? You know? And so there are people on both sides who are really pissed off about that. And supposedly, there are people within the court itself, the justices themselves, were really pissed off about it. You know, they were arguing. It's like, you know, Jesus, you know, what do you do? And here's the other thing about that election, too, 2000, Gore. Like, I'm just going to say it straight out. Al Gore's a moron. And here's the reason he's a moron. First of all, he ran an awful campaign. You know, there should be some competence in your campaigning if you know what the hell you're doing. It's the same with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton lost an election she should have won. She was widely expected to win in 2016. And, unfortunately, she ended up concocting this giant story for which she should go to prison. About the Russians helping Trump, and there was no truth in it whatsoever. She still goes on about this. I mean, it's fucking ridiculous, you know. And she and her campaign made it up. But the fact is, she lost because she ran a terrible campaign, awful. Even her, there's, you know, apocryphal stories that even her husband was telling her this, you know. So. I mean, I can go on and on about the mistakes she made. I can go on and on about the mistakes Gore made, too, but I have to mention a few of them because it was so long ago. First of all, he didn't even take his home state. He couldn't even convince the people of Tennessee to vote for him. He couldn't do that. Secondly, he didn't ask Bill Clinton to campaign for him because Bill Clinton was supposedly tainted by scandal, even though his numbers the entire time and poll numbers were what he was still wildly popular, wildly popular. I keep bringing this up. He left office with a 60% approval rating. You know, I mean, shit. How many people do that nowadays? You know, at no point during the Monica Lewinsky scandal did his approval numbers drop below 50%. At no point. The American public loved him and still does. You know, his wife, I don't know, not so much. But so anyway, and here's another mistake they made, and this was the crucial one. So ostensibly, or actually in what I'm talking about, in reality, George W. Bush won the entire presidential contest by 500 votes in, was it Broward or Dade County in Florida? 500 votes, 532, I can't remember what the exact count was. Okay, so Gore's campaign asked for a recount in those two counties, Broward and Dade, if I'm right. Got that? Okay. By law in Florida, and the Florida Attorney General stuck to this, don't even know if he was a Democrat or Republican, but he did, that in Florida, you can call for a recount of the whole state, but not individual counties. So they didn't do that. He did not. I mean, he had nothing to lose, but they didn't call for a statewide recount because he thought, according to his internal numbers and his campaign, that the numbers would actually be worse for him, not better, wouldn't improve. It turned out he was completely fucking wrong. What years later, or 2 years later, or something like that, the Miami Herald actually decided to do that. Like recount, but of course now it's too late, so now it's kind of hypothetical, but they did it, and they came to the conclusion he actually won Florida, this whole state, by 20,000 votes. It was not even close, in other words, and if he had done that, he would have been president, and he didn't, and he's an idiot. So it's like, you know, I don't, and this is the part I don't understand. Like, you know, he's concerned the numbers would have been worse. You've already lost. And that was the thing, you know, Jim Baker and all the people on the Republican side, that's what they were telling Bush the entire time. You have already won. Just ignore all this other crap. Doesn't matter whether it's 5 million votes or 500 votes. You've already won. You have the most votes, period. And they're right. He did. If Gore had asked for that statewide recount, well, suddenly Gore would have had more votes, but that never occurred to him. Fucking moron. And, you know, and I don't, and, you know, the, if you watch this program, the one thing I'm really stuck on is climate change. It's complete and utter bullshit. We've had Patrick Moore on the show. I'm going to have more scientists on the show. Climate change, you know, they say, you know, follow the science. Well, I did. Climate change is complete and utter crap. It's the biggest grift ever put upon the American public. And I brought that up because, yeah, it's Al Gore basically originated that grift, you know. You watch An Inconvenient Truth, and that movie was from, what, 2008, was it? Or 2012? You know, there's shit he said was going to happen in 20 years hasn't happened. I mean, John Nolte has a list on Breitbart of 54 predictions made about the climate in the last 50 years, and every single one of them is wrong. Every single one turned out to be wrong. Every single one, you know? And so I'm talking to Moore. I interviewed Patrick Moore on the show, and I really strongly urge you to watch that program. The interview with him is about an hour. But, you know, he brings up the fact that there's stuff that people say is terrible that's actually really good for the Earth. Like, here's one, and this is one of my biggest ones. That CO2 is pollution. No, CO2 is not only not pollution, but the everything that lives on Earth needs it. And actually, we don't have a lot right now. We are almost at all-time historic lows for CO2, even though people are saying, oh, CO2 is bringing the temperature up. Well, first of all, this is another newsflash, too, and this really makes a lot of sense if you really follow the science here. Moore points out that the problem isn't that CO2 causes higher temperatures. It's exact opposite cause and effect. Higher temperatures causes more CO2. That's what he says. So, you know, they're talking about Battery Park and New York City being underwater. It's not going to happen. And there's not. Here's one more thing, too, in case you need some convincing to this. All right. Now, this is the kernel of truth in this whole thing. The temperatures on Earth have risen in the last 300 years, and they're still going up. That's true. But as Moore points out, for the first half of those 300 years, there was no industrialization on the planet. Temperature goes up anyway. There's no cars putting out, you know, CO2, nothing, no factories belching out smoke, nothing. It's just we didn't have that shit, and the temperature still went up. And the temperature is still going to go up. It's going to go up. Here's the problem. It doesn't matter. It doesn't really have any effect on anything. You know, as Moore has pointed out, as the amount of CO2 rises, actually we get more growth of all plants on the planet. It's actually better for the Earth, not worse. So, anyway, I brought that up because, yeah, that's how much I think Al Gore is a moron. But now I want to play you something. Speaking of Richard Nixon, I want to play you something that I ran into today going through. I have a very elaborate bookmark system I keep with tags and all sorts of shit, and I was looking for something. It was for the JFK thing next week, and I stumbled into this, and I thought I should play this for you. I actually clipped this. It's from YouTube, and it's from Tucker Carlson's old Fox News television show. This is from January. Hold on. I'm fucking this all up. It's from January of this year. And so this was his opening monologue. This is only like the last 6 minutes of it. But I want you to listen to this. Because it's important. Here's a little bumper here.
So if you want to understand, if you really want to understand how the American government actually works at the highest levels, and if you want to know why they don't teach history anymore, one thing you should know is that the most popular president in American history was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon. Yet somehow, without a single vote being cast by a single American voter, Richard Nixon was kicked out of office and replaced by the only unelected president in American history. So we went from the most popular president to a president nobody voted for. Wait a minute, you may ask. Why didn't I know that? Wasn't Richard Nixon a criminal? Wasn't he despised by all decent people? No, he wasn't. In fact, if any president could claim to be the people's choice, it was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was reelected in 1972 by the largest margin of the popular vote ever recorded before or since. Nixon got 17 million more votes than his opponent. Less than 2 years later, he was gone. He was forced to resign. And in his place, an obedient servant of the federal agencies called Gerald Ford took over the White House. How did that happen? Well, it's a long story, but here are the highlights, and they tell you a lot. Richard Nixon believed that elements in the federal bureaucracy were working to undermine the American system of government and had been doing that for a long time. He often said that. He was absolutely right. On June 23, 1972, Nixon met with the then CIA director Richard Helms at the White House. During the conversation, which thankfully was tape recorded, Nixon suggested he knew, quote, who shot John, meaning President John F. Kennedy. Nixon further implied that the CIA was directly involved in Kennedy's assassination, which we now know it was. Helms' telling response? Total silence. But for Nixon, it didn't matter because it was already over. 4 days before, on June 19th, the Washington Post had published the first of many stories about a break-in at the Watergate office building. Unbeknownst to Nixon and unreported by the Washington Post, four of the five burglars worked for the CIA. The first of many dishonest Watergate stories was written by a 29-year-old Metro reporter called Bob Woodward. Who exactly was Bob Woodward? Well, he wasn't a journalist. Bob Woodward had no background whatsoever in the news business. Instead, Bob Woodward came directly from the classified areas of the federal government. Shortly before Watergate, Woodward was a naval officer at the Pentagon. He had a top-secret clearance. He worked regularly with the intel agencies. At times, Woodward was even detailed to the Nixon White House, where he interacted with Richard Nixon's top aides. Soon after leaving the Navy, for reasons that have never been clear, Woodward was hired by the most powerful news outlet in Washington and assigned the biggest story in the country. And just to make it crystal clear what was actually happening, Woodward's main source for his Watergate series was the deputy director of the FBI, Mark Felt. And Mark Felt ran, and we're not making this up, the FBI's COINTELPRO program, which was designed to secretly discredit political actors the federal agencies wanted to destroy, people like Richard Nixon. And at the same time, those same agencies were also working to take down Nixon's elected vice president, Spiro Agnew. In the fall of 1973, Agnew was indicted for tax evasion and forced to resign. His replacement was a colorless congressman from Grand Rapids called Gerald Ford. What was Ford's qualification for the job? Well, he had served on the Warren Commission, which absolved the CIA of responsibility for President Kennedy's murder. Nixon was strong-armed into accepting Gerald Ford by Democrats in Congress. Quote, "We gave Nixon no choice but Ford," Speaker of the House Carl Albert later boasted. 8 months later, Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission was the president of the United States. See how that works? So those are the facts, not speculation. All of that actually happened. None of it's secret. Most of it actually is on Wikipedia. But no mainstream news organization has ever told that story. It's so obvious, yet it's intentionally ignored. And as a result, permanent Washington remains in charge of our political system. Unelected lifers in the federal agencies make the biggest decisions in American government and crush anyone who tries to rein them in. And in the process, our democracy becomes a joke. Now, you may have noticed that the very first person in the Trump administration the agencies went after was General Michael Flynn. Why Flynn? Because Mike Flynn was a career Army intel officer who ran the Defense Intelligence Agency. In other words, Mike Flynn knew exactly how the system worked. And as a result, he was capable of fighting back. 4 days after Donald Trump's inauguration, the FBI lured Mike Flynn into a meeting without his lawyer, concocted a series of fake crimes, and forced him to resign. So that's how things actually work in Washington. Let's stop lying about it. Joe Biden, meanwhile, whooped like a hyena when the Justice Department destroyed Mike Flynn. So there is, we have to say, a certain perverse justice in watching something very similar happen to Joe Biden himself 6 years later. Joe Biden does not deserve our sympathy. He's being shafted, but don't weep for him. And yet the rest of us do deserve a better system, an actual democracy. When people nobody voted for run everything, you are not living in a free country.
Now, it bears repeating, that clip is from January of this year. It isn't recent. And, of course, you know, Tucker Carlson is no longer on Fox News, even. So, there's a couple things I need to go through here, because although I think everything he said is pretty much true, there's a few assumptions or implications that may not be. The one is actually about the Watergate break-in itself. Now, he's right about the fact that four of the five guys who broke into the Watergate were CIA agents. That's actually true. It's also true, and it's pretty much verified by history now, that Nixon did not know about the break-in ahead of time. Historically, Nixon's crime here was covering up the break-in. He did not know about it. I've said this before. If Nixon had gone on the next day, had gone into a press conference, into the press room at the White House, said, look, these five guys from the Republican National Committee got arrested. They busted into, they were trying to, well, actually, they're trying, what their goal was to bug the place, but they were rifling through papers, and, you know, ostensibly, if they wanted to get, they were, you know, wanted to get data, and, you know, worse, I did not know about it, which he didn't. That's true. And he said, you know, they're going to be prosecuted the full extent of the law. I'd like to apologize to the Democrats, la-di-da. We would never be talking about this. And if their goal was to bring down Nixon, they would have had to come up with another way. That actually brings me to Biden right now. And that is, they're trying to bring down Biden, but it's not working. And there's two reasons it's not working. First of all, he's a stubborn old jackass. And he simply, at this point, whether he's aware of it or not, He's not taking the hint. It's like he's 80 years old, and fuck those people. I'm going to die here. That's the way. There's that, and also, oh yeah, this is a good time to lose a train of thought. Yeah, great, terrific. Hold on, just wait a second. I got to calculate. No commercial breaks here. I don't have time to think. The fact that they're going. Shit. Hold on, this is going to come to me. All right, but before it comes to me, I'm going to go back to Nixon. So the thing is, so these guys broke, you know, like I said, if Nixon had actually apologized, nobody would be talking about this. There's another thing that you have to address if you're going to talk about this topic, and that is, it's really dubious that if you're going to buy Tucker's theory and other people's theory, those five guys wanted to get caught so that they could get this whole thing in motion, that it was deliberate. Based on the actual crime, it'd be kind of tough to do that. So they were caught by a security guard named Frank Wills. I had to look the guy's name up today. I didn't know it. And, of course, like a lot of people, a lot of quote-unquote little people gets caught up in giant things. This basically ruined his life. But he's doing his job. And he caught them because he was the security guard at the Watergate complex, and one of them. And going through his regular rounds at night, he found two doors where the locks were taped open. And if I'm right, I'm not pulling this out of my butt, and because I didn't read this today, but if I'm correct, he pulled the tape off of one of the doors, and then on his second round, it was back. And that's when he decided something really fishy was going on. And so he ended up going through the building, and he caught these guys. That's what happened. And he called the police, duh, right? Okay, so the thing is, it's tough. If that is how the actual crime went down, I mean, who knows? It's like, you know, I don't know if you go, folks are following this. It's starting to get to the point where some of the most basic facts we think we know about history turn out to be incorrect, especially if people don't want them to be correct, you know? So if you're going to go by the historical account, this guy caught these guys in the act because of a fairly small detail, which, you know, he was pretty observant, and he quit his job as a security guard for the Watergate because they refused to give him a raise because he caught these guys. And basically from what I've read, he had trouble with employment the rest of his life because of the notoriety of what he did. And they would drag him out, like, for anniversaries and stuff. And he played himself on the movie All the President's Men, I guess. But he died at 52 from a brain tumor in 2000. His life was not pretty after that. It's same with Monica Lewinsky. I mean, you know, regardless of what you think of Monica or Bill Clinton or what these people did, you know, the fact of the matter is Monica Lewinsky's life has basically been hell since that happened. She can't find any employment. There's no, you know, people don't want her. I mean, it's really tough being in this position or her position. So what was I going to say about Biden? Okay, the fact there were, I was going to say there's two things, and that is, first of all, he's a stubborn old ass. Oh, and secondly, they might be trying, and it's not working. It's in the same sense that the Watergate break-in was maybe not necessarily planned. These guys didn't plan to get caught. See, the thing is, if you're going to buy Tucker's argument, you kind of have to buy the fact that they planned to get caught, or, you know, that they deliberately got, you know, they and it's hard, based on the way the crime is set up, based on what we know, it's tough to kind of figure that out. This is the other reason for Joe, and that is Joe has treated the permanent class in Washington extremely well. As far as anyone can tell, that's the reason everyone covers for him. That he's done a lot of favors for a lot of people above and beyond the call of duty. That, you know, that's basically his entire political life has been quid pro quo, you know. So, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, you got the DOJ, the FBI, there's a lot of people in these places who think they owe Joe a bone because he threw them one once, you know. And that's the part that Axelrod is not taking into account. So I don't know, you know. Most of the people in Washington in the swamp actually know most of this shit, but the thing is, you know, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, I'm starting to think there's no way Biden's going to be the nominee. There's too many people trying to get him out, and they will come up with something, you know. So the thing, I don't know, the whole thing, the Watergate thing is very interesting because, you know, I mean, I was like 18 when that happened, so I followed that as much as an 18-year-old kid too. Good, and I didn't have any context for any of the information, so like I didn't know shit. I'm a former liberal, you know. I still remember, I was thinking about this afternoon. There was in the building I lived in here in Minneapolis when I first got married, there were two young women in my building right down the hall. We basically ended up befriending them, and they were let me just be perfectly blunt. They were extremely beautiful, both of them. And they were roommates. They're from a small town in Minnesota where they knew each other. And one was like the homecoming queen, and the other was, it was like these, they were, their lives were entangled. But both of these women, and they both had fairly high powered jobs. One of them worked for a large record company or television network, if I'm right. And the other one worked for a giant nonprofit here in town. And anyway, they were very, very attractive women. And the whole city was trying to date them. They were coded. I remember one of them ended up dating a guy, one of the CEOs of the major airlines or something like that. You know, they lived in a world we don't live in. That's my point. One of them, I don't actually know for the other, but one of them was very famously a Republican at that time. And I remember talking to her when she was moving out. I said, you know, I don't understand this Republican thing. How could you do this? And she says, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, they probably don't want you." I'm talking about the Republicans, you know. And of course, I was completely full of shit. And of course, now the amazing thing is, I realized that she answered me the same way I answer liberals now, which is basically a nondescript bullshit answer. She didn't really give me an answer. I ran into her at a Target. This is like 30 years later, a couple of years ago, you know, I ran into her and I told her, I still remember, you know, that conversation we had where I said, well, you know, why are you a Republican? And she, even then she tried to poo-poo me. She said, no. I said, no, I'm bringing this up because I want to tell you, I switched teams. I don't know. You had to be there. But why did I even bring that story up? Who knows? Who knows? You know? Yeah, but here's, yeah, so the thing, oh, it was because of Nixon. So, you know, you could make an argument that what Nixon did, my point was that when I was that age, when that was happening, everyone thought this was really, really evil, what he did, this thing about busting the Democratic National Committee. Now, I have to tell you this, too. In terms of how he handled it, that was relatively predictable because Nixon was notoriously paranoid, completely. So I suppose if they were going to planning this crime, you could get the impression that they did it strictly to let Nixon know they did it and that Nixon would react in a paranoid manner, which would fuck him up. And that's exactly what happened. Precisely. He ended up going about covering up the Republican, the RNC's involvement in that, and that's actually what brought him down, not the actual act itself, which, like I said, he didn't even know was going to happen. He was completely out of the loop, and I'm sure that was deliberate, too. It was either deliberate from a point, from a beneficial point, a political point of view, or from a malevolent point of view. Either way, they did not want him in the loop, so... Yeah, it's amazing. Every day goes by, 60 years from the JFK assassination, it's starting to look more and more like, at the very least, more than Oswald was involved. You know, I mean, my version of the story, which I've patched together over years and years of research. And like I said, I'm what I call a meta research. I research other people's research. That's what I do. There's no real even evidence that Oswald was in the snipers at Nest on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository. Now the general consensus here. I shouldn't get into this because I'm going to talk about this for an hour next Wednesday. The general consensus is that, but of course I'm going to, the general consensus is that there was at least three shooters in the plaza, and one of them was in that sniper's nest at the Texas School Book Depository. But like I said, there's no evidence it was Oswald, and there's even quite a lot of evidence that it distinctly wasn't, and I'll tell you about that on Wednesday. The only thing is why Oswald was involved, you know, even if he wasn't a shooter, he was involved in this whole thing. And he was basically set up to be the patsy. That's kind of the idea. So, but like I said, he was involved. There were three shooters, and there's one other thing I'm going to bring up about this right here, too. The Zapruder film has been digitally cleaned up and reconstructed. And if I'm right, television stations don't have the rights to play unless they buy it. The actual digital reconstruction of the film. So what they did is the film is very shaky. First of all, it's 18 frames a second. It's like 60. It's 8mm film. The picture is just plain fucking bad, you know. And he did have, I don't know if he used a tripod, but I think he used one of those single stand tripods, if I'm right. So the picture is shaky itself. On top of that, Zapruder's holding the camera. And it's the film, the original film is basically a mess. But now, with digital and AI reconstruction, they have come up with a version of it that's completely smooth and completely clear. And in that version, it's completely obvious that the wound to President Kennedy's head, his skull, was shot from the front. It's completely obvious. Now, there's a woman, I can't remember the woman's name. She was the chief forensics analyst for the Dallas Police Department for like 20, 25 years. She said this years ago. She said she was 100% certain that fatal shot to his head came from the front. And this is a woman who's an expert at this. Anyway, we're going to talk more about that on Wednesday. And now I just lost my notes. Holy shit. God damn, how the hell does this happen? I can't retrieve them. One moment. No, I can't. Okay, that's great. So, what else was I going to talk about? Let's see if I can remember. That's terrible. Why do you even watch this? I really appreciate you doing. Matter of fact, I have a little announcement to make. Very happy. It's like we're going to bust 900 followers on Rumble in the next like 24 hours. I think when I checked, we're at 889, I think, or something like that. And that's that, I really appreciate it. Thank you. I mean, we're doing our 50th show tomorrow, and so far so good. You know, the numbers have been good. Oh, I have to say, it's still. Oh, by the way, seriously, like I lost my note. I just lost my notes. Call me up. Go to jimandnight.com/call. Push the big blue button. We'll talk. The numbers for watching the show live are not particularly good, but on demand afterwards, archived, yeah, they've been quite good. So I really appreciate that a lot. And it doesn't help that we have some decent guests on here too, doesn't? Yeah. So tomorrow night, most decent guest of all, Michael Harrison. Guys, he's famous in the talk radio industry. I mean, well known. He runs the annual convention, the Talkers Convention, which is, where everybody in the talk business in the United States, both TV and radio, show up. It's by invitation only. I was really, really flattered. They invited me this year. I went in June. Nobody knows we were shit, and they invited me. I was very flattered. But anyway, he's going to be on. We're going to talk about his life and times. We're going to talk about the talk radio industry, and I've been bugging him about this today. He also is really into the paranormal, which of course we do on the show regularly. So I want to know if there's something he wants to talk about in that regard too, Bigfoot or whatever. I don't know. The people that know I do this show in my life, you know, when I go around and people know I do this, the questions I get most of all is like, do you believe in Bigfoot? Do you think that's real? It's crazy. You know, I don't, and the thing is, you know, my reputation is kind of off the UFO thing. I mean, you know, and okay, I'm happy to talk about that. I know a lot about the UFO phenomenon in the United States, both the politics of it and the actual, you know, sightings and stuff. I know a lot. Bigfoot, I don't know. Larry Newman comes on, you know, we do a Bigfoot panel, you know, so, you know, I guess here's the deal. I'm leaning toward the fact that Bigfoot's real. And I this is a lot on Larry, because Larry said, and Larry, you know, he got the Bigfoot Field Research Organization. He got on as an investigator, mostly because he was formerly a police investigator. So he knows the procedures. But he said on the show before, he joined the Bigfoot Field Research Organization as a skeptic. He did not believe in Bigfoot. But he said he saw Bigfoot and actually watched Bigfoot for an hour through an infrared camera in the dead of night at some woods somewhere that was in the pitch dark. But he saw them through the infrared. He said it was a family of Bigfoot, mama, papa, and a little one. And he watched them for an hour. And he said that convinced him that Bigfoot's real. So, we've had other people on here too. But I'm not an expert on Bigfoot. I don't know, you know. I'm just hosting these people, you know, like, come on. All right. So, you know, I'm going to wrap this up. I had more to talk about. I did. It's probably going to have to wait till tomorrow, although we'll have a nice interview with, we're pre-taping the interview with Michael Harrison. Nobody on the East Coast wants to do this 11:30 at night. I don't blame them, but still, it's, you know, I don't know. I like doing the interviews live. Now, on Wednesday, Jeff Myers coming on. Jeff Myers here in Minneapolis. He's coming on live. So it's 10:30 for him, but he, you know, he's willing to do that, and that's kind of cool, and I like that. That's kind of fun. So, and of course, we have other, you know, David Strom is also here in Minneapolis, too, even though he works for Hot Air, which is like a national publication. And, whatever. Thanks for watching, everybody. I really appreciate it. Yeah, tune in tomorrow, 50th show. 50th show, Michael Harrison is our guest. Wednesday, 51st show, Jeff Meyer from Kong News. So I want to thank you guys for watching. Really, numbers have been wonderful and very encouraging. I really appreciate it. If you're asking me when are we going to start running commercials, I'm going to put it off as long as possible. I am. So good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. I'll see you tomorrow.